2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Ever seen the sky so blue? The birds are singing, I got nothing to do. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It is a sunny day.
Sunny day now.
My pocket's empty, my cupboard's bare. But call me illogical, I just don't care. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It's just a sunny day.
The KSL Greenhouse. Information and great talk about your home, garden, and your lawn. If you love perennials, can't get enough help on landscape design, or just want to keep your lawn and vegetable garden pest-free, grab a pen. It's the KSL Greenhouse on KSL News Radio.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse on this holiday weekend. Maria Chalaos, Ton Bettis with you this morning. We are taking your calls at 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500. Ton, you have been getting a lot of complaints about problems with tomatoes already. Wanted to start the show this morning talking about different problems, including curly top, which is the one that you've been getting the most complaints about.
We have, and we are going to be sending some samples up to our lab on Tuesday, Mike Heron and I, to confirm curly top. But just in the last 2 days, we've been inundated with calls about why are my tomatoes all of a sudden dying. And I believe that it's a disease called curly top that is spread by the beet leaf hopper. And leaf hoppers are insects that will feed almost like an aphid, where they're piercing and sucking, and they suck the juices out of the leaves of the plants. But they're also vectors for the curly top virus that gets into bees, beets, and also tomatoes. And when it gets into a tomato, what you will see is the gradual decline of the tomato, and usually the top portions of the leaves, the reason it's called curly top, the leaves start to curl. But it doesn't look like herbicide damage or there's another, you know, physiological leaf roll. It has its own unique look, and the tomatoes turn light green. Now, if they get it a little later in the season and there's tomatoes on, the tomatoes will ripen before the plant dies, but they have an off flavor to them.
So does this transfer from one tomato plant to another?
If leaf hoppers hop from plant to plant, yes. It can spread that way. And so if you see it in an infected tomato, you just dig them out and throw them away in the garbage can away from your garden, because it's unavoidable that you'll have a few leaf hoppers and aphids and things of that nature. But if you can get the infested plants out, you'll reduce the risk of other tomatoes in your garden getting it. I talked to one grower that was saying 20 to 30% losses so far, another growing saying 50% losses. And what will happen is the beet leaf hopper blows in on the wind and will start feeding on tomatoes. And we don't see the actual results of that for a couple of weeks. And so people ask, well, can I spray to keep it out? And yeah, you can spray to kill the leaf hoppers and aphids, but they have to actually feed on the plant to be killed. And if they're vectoring that curly top virus, then you're had. And so I think the best thing to do is just rogue out all the infected tomatoes. If you're going to go in and try to spray for it, don't use a harsh insecticide more than once, you know, like a permethrin or bifenthrin or something, or 7, because if you repeatedly use those, you'll actually knock out a lot of beneficials. And I would, if you're going to spray, I would switch over to horticultural soap and spray that weekly to see if you can keep the populations down.
It is really hot. How are people going to know the difference between curly top and maybe just drooping from lack of water?
The tomatoes will tolerate the heat and look fine. It's just that they will not produce a lot of fruit until we're consistently in the low 90s and below 70 at night in late summer. And so the tomatoes will look fine, but if you have curly top in there, once you've seen it, you know what it looks like, and the tomatoes look unhealthy. They become stunted and just gradually go from light green to yellow to almost white. But by the time they hit that color, they're starting to turn crispy.
Okay. What are some of the other common problems you see in tomatoes?
Well, it's still a bit early, but the other one we get a lot of calls on, or another one, is the blossom end rot. And the first tomatoes of the season, a lot of the tomatoes will have a leathery, dark, kind of grayish black bottom to them, to where it almost looks like somebody lopped the bottom of the tomato off and the bottom of it turned black. And that's blossom end rot, and that's caused by calcium deficiency when the tomato was fertilized. If there's not enough calcium in the system, this can happen. And so it's really commonly caused by fluctuating water, irrigation levels. And so if you let the tomatoes dry out and then heavily irrigate, that will temporarily make them unable to uptake calcium out of the soil. Hmm. It's also caused by sporadic weather. 3 or 4 weeks ago, we were jumping from the 60s to 100 to the 60s to 100. So if there were tomatoes that were pollinated then, they were are more likely to have blossom end rot. Now, in talking to Sheridan Hansen, she feels like, and I don't want to put too many words in her mouth, that if you buy a calcium spray, that you can spray the blossoms, that may help out a bit to get some calcium into those blossoms. And so, but the, I think the main management here is to make sure that the tomatoes are not too wet, but they never really dry out, and just be patient, because the first tomatoes of the season have it, and it diminishes as the season goes along.
And with the blossom end rot, you can cut off the bottom part of the tomato. The top part's still good to eat.
Perfectly fine.
Don't have to worry about that. Okay, anything else we need to know?
Well, we'll have to see how things shake out, because it seems like the curly top hits areas really badly.
Mm-hmm.
You can go 3 or 4 miles away and everybody's tomatoes are fine. And so it's funny how that happens. When I was growing tomatoes in a trialing program, I'd have a half acre of tomatoes, and I did it for 5 years. 2 out of the 5 years, my tomatoes were decimated and I couldn't collect data because of blossom end rot.
Wow. Okay, well, hopefully we won't see much of that problem, but we're already dealing with the curly top. So if you want to find out more, you're just tuning in to the middle of the conversation. Were you going to add something there? No?
Yeah, actually, it wasn't blossom end rot. It was curly top. Just
okay.
Misspoke.
Okay. I lost my train. Oh, you can find out more about these two problems on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page. We put up an article for you there. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. And you can text us your questions at 57500.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent. It was senseless, and I will never understand it. I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story, the struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning. Thank you for spending your Saturday morning with the KSL Greenhouse. Maria and Ton with you this morning. We are taking your calls at 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500. Been talking about tomatoes, and one of our texters says, is it too late to plant tomatoes?
No. If you can find shorter season tomatoes, you'd have better luck because they should have gone in a month ago. But if we have a longer season, which we may, and you planted, you know, even celebrities, if you can find them, you would get a crop, but they wouldn't start producing until late September into October. So the other thing you could do if you wanted to plant now would be to plan on covering the tomatoes with like the, if they wanted to watch one of our old videos, and Sheridan talked about low tunnels with the small hoops that you put over the row, they could do that with some floating row cover or some plastic and get those tomatoes into mid to late October and just get a really late harvest.
Okay, next listener says, is fertilizer flammable? Should they wait until the fireworks window is over before they put it down?
No, they're fine. The fertilizer of concern was ammonium nitrate, and that's pretty much been pulled from the homeowner market. You can get it, but you have to show ID and sign documents to get it.
Oh.
And it's usually not available in quantities to fertilize a lawn. So the fertilizer's out there, and it's that the ammonium nitrate was, I think, an oxidizer. I'm getting into areas that chemistry is not my strong suit, but
definitely not mine.
It's a strong oxidizer, and so it caused those explosions. So it was pulled, and so the current fertilizers we have, there's not really a danger from them, and so I just go ahead and fertilize, and you'll be absolutely fine.
Okay.
So
okay, Harry wants to know. He says you mentioned using liquid nitrogen to green up lawns. He wants to know, what is liquid nitrogen?
It's just fertilizer that's been dissolved into water and form a solution, and it's concentrated. And what you will do is you can go to garden centers or farm stores and purchase pre-mixed lawn fertilizer in a bottle that you just hook your hose to, and it'll do 3,000 or 4,000 or 5,000 square feet. And if you just have a smaller yard that you want a faster green up, you can use a liquid nitrogen, and it'll green it up more quickly, but it is used more quickly. And so it's something that if you have a wedding in a month and you didn't get your fertilizer down, a liquid fertilizer might help green things up a little bit more than a granule.
All right. Becky is on the line in Mill Creek. Good morning, Becky. What is your question?
Hi. I have just had, last week I had my backyard all installed with sod, and they told me I should water it about 3 to 4 times a day, about 15, 20 minutes. I'm noticing that there's little edges that are kind of going a little bit yellow, and I'm wondering if I need to water it more or if I'm overwatering. I don't want it to die on me. I just got a question about that.
Well, it's pretty normal for new sod in the heat of the summer to get some brown edges. It just happens.
Okay.
And so I wouldn't increase the irrigation because it may be a little too much. But if you see edges everywhere starting to desiccate or dry down, you may need to ramp it up just a bit. And I would go, if it seems like what you have is mostly working, just increase a couple of minutes a station.
Okay.
And see if that helps. You don't want to go and add another, half hour a day, because you don't want every edge drying out. But I will say that even in the summer heat, if the 85 or 90% of the sod is establishing fine, that it'll root down, and within a couple of months, those edges will disappear as the grass and the roots start to spread.
Well, and I also noticed this morning as I went out to do the watering that there were like a few, I couldn't tell if they were weeds or not, but little things that were sprouting up, about, two or three of those. And I found a couple little mushrooms. So I wondered, do I need to worry about that? Does that mean anything?
No, it just means that there's lots of moisture in the soil and there's available organic matter for the mushrooms to break down.
Okay.
Then if it
doesn't
look like Kentucky bluegrass and doesn't smell like Kentucky bluegrass, it's a weed, and I would go ahead and pull it.
Okay. Perfect. So just maybe increase my watering a little bit, maybe just in those edges that are a little bit brown. There's not very many. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. I just didn't want it to die, and it's so pretty. So thank you. I appreciate you guys so much.
All right, Becky, thanks so much for your call this morning. Next listener says, is there a way, Ton, to get rid of verticillium wilt in their soil? They say it killed their red bud 2 years ago. Now it's in the process of killing their red maple.
No, not really. Mm. You can, and I don't have the list in front of me, but you can do an internet search and just look for verticillium wilt-resistant trees.
Mm-hmm.
And there are several that are out there. It's just that maples are highly susceptible to it, and redbuds seem to be too.
Okay. Brad is on the line in Farmington. Good morning, Brad. What is your question?
Yeah, I've got some property in Huntsville, and we've got some spreading of quaking aspen in the lawn. There's quaking aspen along a fence line between another property, but now we've got some shoots coming up in other parts of the lawn, and I'm trying to figure out how to mitigate that so it's not coming up in other parts of the lawn and stuff.
So are the aspen native, or were they planted by a landscaper?
I think that they were planted.
Okay. So the stand isn't, the reason I ask, I just wanted to make sure you weren't trying to battle a forest. So the aspens, that's how they roll as far as how they propagate, is through those root suckers. And to keep them out of your yard, you're pretty much going to have to put in a barrier that's 2.5-3 feet deep using corrugated aluminum, or you can get on like forestry suppliers. Sort of Forestry Supply, which is an online store, and you can find plastic barrier that's 2.5 feet tall that will go that deep. But because those roots go that deep, that's how deep you need to go to keep them out of your yard.
Okay. So if I just cut them, that's just going to help it propagate more?
Well, if you cut them and tear the aspens out, you will keep them out of your yard for, you know, several months, but where you tip cut or cut those roots, there's potential for them to form more trees from that point. And they're more likely to. And so it's just a game of cat and mouse or whack-a-mole, to where you just keep, if you see them start to come up, dig them and occasionally take the roots out. But it was unintentional, but annoying that the neighbors put them so close to the property line.
Uh-huh. So could I put, cut them down to the grass dirt level and then put some sucker stopper?
That would help slow them down. It wouldn't totally eliminate them, but it would slow the sucker formation down.
Okay.
All right, Brad.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for your call this morning. I'm not sure he's really satisfied with the answer. We need to take a break for the bottom of the hour news. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500.
Let's dig around town with KSL Greenhouse.
Dig Around Town is brought to you by Utah State University Extension. Check out monthly gardening tips and online gardening courses at garden.usu.edu. Find out how to create a water-wise park strip with Conservation Garden Park on Thursday, July 7th at 6 p.m. Learn best practices to save water through appropriate watering, plant selection, and planned maintenance. Register at conservationgardenpark.org. Take a summer perennials tour with Weber Basin Water on Wednesday, July 13th at 6:30. Learn about the plants you can use for summer color. Register at weberbasin.com. Learn the foundations of growing cut flowers with USU Botanical Center in Kaysville on Wednesday, July 13th from 6 to 8 p.m. Get expert instruction, hands-on field opportunities, a soil test, seed starting supplies, and harvest supplies. Register at extension.usu.edu. Now a look at this week's Quick Tip.
Perennial hibiscus is one of my favorite plants. It is sometimes called dinner plate hibiscus. Old-fashioned types could easily grow to over 6 feet tall and mainly bloomed in late July until August. However, modern hybrids bloom from July clear until frost, and they don't get nearly so tall. Plant perennial hibiscus in full sun because it really likes heat. It also requires an average amount of water, but it isn't particularly drought tolerant. If you want to purchase perennial hibiscus, get it soon because it often sells out.
You can also find the Dig Around Town calendar and more fun gardening info at kslnewsradio.com/greenhouse.
A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.